This is an Envoice Media podcast.
Today, I want to talk about something that is more important than all this other stuff. It's the thing that makes the big bucks. You have the ability to plant the seed in people's minds for things they might not even know they want.
Yeah, that's why I feel like TikTok is such an effective form of marketing.
Our ability to flip through images so fast, it's amazing, right? The search engine of our brain tells us, like, is this for us or is this not for us?
You're listening to Manipulation Games Psychology and Marketing Podcast with your hosts, Gene and Darren.
One, two. Welcome to Manipulation Games Psychology and Marketing Podcast. I'm Darren with my marketing expert, Gene.
Hi.
All right. Well, you know, we should also talk about why you go aha, right? Because that's it's symbolic for like the light bulb, I feel like.
I guess, yeah. Or it's also, it's a cue. It's to get into a certain mood, right?
Well, like one of the goals, again, for our podcast is like for everyone to have that aha moment. And that's kind of like why I like that. Because I feel like every time I listen to you in every episode, I feel like I have at least one aha moment. I'm just like, whoa.
Just one?
Well, I mean, multiple. Okay, fine. Multiple aha moments.
Okay. I don't like that metric. You know?
How many ahas have you discovered in each episode?
Yeah, yeah. I want more ahas.
Okay. Well,
we need to maximize ahas per minute.
When we're talking about the KPIs, the maximum actions, maximum ahas per second.
Yeah, so.
Or per minute. That'll be hilarious. Okay. Then we can gamify it.
Yeah, we have to gamify it. Make it interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so what are we talking about today?
Okay, well, so Darren's been harping on me to like go back to the basics, right? So like, so far we talked about like glamour and glamour advertising, which is, you know, it's a, you know, again, what I would call a sexy topic, a fun topic. Uh-huh. And we talked about alien hand syndrome last time and about how the deeper brains can like fight.
Spooky.
Which is kind of spooky.
Yeah.
Today, I want to talk about something that I think we can consider boring. But it's more important than all this other stuff.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. It just is. And if you do want to make money, and especially if you want to make money in marketing, the stuff we're going to talk about today is going to be more important than all the other topics.
Wow.
And I'll explain why.
Okay.
And so I think we're going to call this podcast or the episode something along the lines of like advertising as hedge fund management.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or potentially advertising is gambling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Because, okay, so if you think about advertising, right, and marketing, you are basically selling at scale, right? Mm-hmm. You're doing the same thing that a guy is doing when he's walking door to door, knocking on doors, right? Mm-hmm. And you're doing this at scale, right? And if you were to sort of divide up the topic into two kind of umbrellas, right, the way I like to think about it, you can divide it up into message and targeting.
Okay, message and targeting.
Right, so content and delivery. So message and content, right, is basically, it's like what you're communicating to people. It's what you're telling them.
Right, and they're both equal in a sense that it's kind of like if you have the wrong message, it's not going to communicate.
I don't think they're equal.
But then if you're selling that message to the wrong audience, they're not going to respond to it either. So you have to.
Yeah, so that's the argument I'm going to make is that, the episode we did on glamour, the episode we did on alien hand syndrome, we're talking about ways of being able to influence people through communicating something to them. Mm-hmm. Basically the content of the message, right? And the argument I would make is the content of the message is not anywhere as important as targeting.
Really? So you think targeting has more weight.
It's way more weight. And it's kind of the sad thing because like content, creating beautiful advertisements, that's the fun part, right? Mm-hmm. But really the targeting is the thing that, you know, it's the thing that makes the big bucks, right?
Yeah.
And so the way to sort of think about it is that you can show the most perfect, most beautiful, amazing ad to the wrong person and nothing will happen. Yeah, right, you won't get it, your desired result will not occur.
Right,
you can have the ugliest, worst, terrible ad, misspellings, just awful colors, whatever it is. But if you show it to the right person, you still have a chance.
No, somebody
will still close. Right. So the content allows you to magnify the potential of your result. Right. Mm-hmm. But if your targeting, if your ability to deliver ads to the right person is wrong, then you're done. You're dead in the water.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense. Like, it goes the same way of like what kind of products you're marketing or selling. You know, if you're selling yoga pants to, you know, men over 50 years old, like you can show it to a million men. You're not going to get any sales, you know. So it's like targeting is very, very important.
Targeting, right? So targeting or ad delivery, that kind of thing. I had a phrase that me and my best friend, we started like an ad agency when we first got out of college and we were kind of dumb kids running around. And our tagline was, today's advertising battles are won by data nerds. Right. Which again is sort of something that aligns with that idea. Is today's advertising battles are won by data nerds.
I like it. Would you consider yourself a data nerd?
I think so. I try to pretend like I'm not. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to put on airs like, oh, I'm trying to be cool and stuff. But really, at the end of the day, you know, like I'm probably a data nerd.
Well, you know, that's a good way to look at it, because like when you think about like the glamorous, you know, Mad Men age of advertising marketing, you think it's like you don't consider themselves data nerds. They're just very like, you know, cerebral, trying to craft the perfect image, and you know, they're using glamour and all these like different techniques to get people to buy stuff.
Right.
But now, where you know metrics are so important, you have to be a data nerd.
Yeah.
You know, along with understanding the fundamentals of how to manipulate people emotionally to get them to buy your product with the right images, right? So it's a balance between like the copy and the message, but also kind of like analyzing the data too.
Yeah. And so, so what kind of brings up with that like old Mad Men age, right? Mm-hmm. Recently I've been reading the David Ogilvy's book, Confessions of an Advertising Man, right? Mm-hmm. And David Ogilvy started working for Gallup, Dr. Gallup.
Okay.
Before he became an advertising guy. Okay. Okay. So even though he's a genius in terms of writing words, uh-huh. he is actually one of the first people to bring research into advertising, which allowed him to become massively successful.
The Gallup polls.
The Gallup polls. Yeah. Like he's famous. One of the people who sort of invented uh-huh. the polling methods, ways of doing kind of metrics across large groups of people.
Interesting.
So advertising is hedge fund management. So day to day, you can obviously create an ad and have it go out in the world, but to essentially win these advertising battles, mm-hmm. right, you have to be able to win in these auction systems oftentimes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to essentially place the ads in front of the right person, and you have to be able to spend money efficiently, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So essentially the idea is that most of the time when you're advertising, right, you are spending a certain amount of money and you're expecting a certain amount of result, right? Mm-hmm. You're essentially, it's like almost like investing in real estate, but you're investing in the real estate of people's attention.
Mm. Oh, right. That's a good way to put it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that happens, like even here, like in our office, like we spend like insane amounts of money on advertising.
How much do we spend a month?
A lot. A lot. A lot.
Do you get special treatment, by the way, from the like Meta?
Oh yeah, yeah, like, yeah, yeah. We've been invited there. We've been there a few times. Yeah.
I don't want to like go off tangent, but I remember like when I was working at .coms back in the day. You know, like Google. You know, when Google Ads was like so big, they would like, you know, have like little like kind of low wage. You know, ad managers, you know, put them in limousines and take them off to play these like crazy, like reality games mm-hmm. and like just part of like, hey, thank you for being part of Google. You know, we're going to have a whole field day and have fun with you guys just to like treat them like with like royalty.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun.
Yeah. So yeah. They still do that. They have like at Meta, they have the performance road show. They bring people into the office.
Yeah.
You know, they feed you, I don't know, like drinks and granola and I don't know, there's like food. So basically, yeah, they're still obviously trying to develop the relationships with you and trying to essentially, their job is try to get you to spend more, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so when you're spending the money, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been getting so many parallels from, is it our sister podcast, Scared Money, Don't Make Money?
That's one of our podcasts.
It's one of our podcasts here in NYC.
It's a gambling
podcast. It's a gambling podcast. Yes. So I've been getting a lot of insights and thinking about just by listening to Sam and Sonny and their, you know, about their careers in gambling, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when you are spending these huge amounts of money, let's say, you know, you're spending $30,000 a day, right? And nothing happens. or you're not getting the result you want. Uh-huh. It is stressful. It is scary. You know, it's again, like you start thinking about it, like, I imagine that's like what people on Wall Street, you know, that's why they end up having to drink so much and like, you know.
Yeah. It's very stressful. And like incredibly your job stressful. Is on the line if you don't get a return on your investment, your ROI.
So,
but it's like, it is kind of like gambling. I never really thought of it that way. But you have to somehow come up with some sort of formula to win.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to get fired.
Exactly. So today we're going to talk about this formula. Uh-huh. And one of the things I think I'm trying to do in terms of how we teach people in this, uh-huh. right, is that a lot of kind of things we talk about, we're talking about things kind of top down, uh-huh. where we're trying to come up with a concept or a rule, an idea, uh-huh. that people can sort of like think about and then try to make decisions based on that rule. Uh-huh. And then I think sometimes we should throw in some things that are kind of bottom up, where we tell people the exact thing to do, mm-hmm. right? An actual like technique, a rule.
Yeah.
Right. And we can kind of meet in the middle. So you're kind of learning the general concept, but also potentially a specific technique.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of where we're heading. Okay. So gambling and like advertising is kind of is similar. Like there's almost like a weird superstition thing about it. Like sometimes you touch a campaign and everything goes the wrong way.
Yeah, you don't touch it.
Right.
It
no, passes. Yeah. And so there's a little bit of this like superstition thing.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite things, like my boss Spike, right, who's a brilliant advertiser, uh-huh. right? His style of advertising is what he calls spray and pray.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he does these massive campaigns that just go uh-huh. out into the world, yeah, right? And then again, it's like you send the campaign out and you're just like, spray and pray, you're just getting it out there. And so there's this like, sometimes, as an ad manager, uh-huh. right? You have the touch. Mm. You have the mojo.
Yeah, yeah.
And things are working out in your favor.
But that has to come with experience though, right? You probably have to fail a lot.
Probably, yeah.
And experiment and do that spray and pray to know like what is that one ad or creative that what made that one succeed and get a return. Versus all the other stuff.
Yeah, because it's a lot of really small decisions you're making, mm-hmm. right? And they're probably these decisions are happening really fast mm. as you get better. Like any sort of art form we're talking about, like, somebody is a great basketball player.
Yeah.
They're not thinking consciously, right?
Yeah.
They're just reacting based on...
You have to build that instinct.
Yeah.
So I think a really good advice we could give to new marketers, just go out and experiment.
Yeah, you have to essentially be willing to... lose money.
Yeah.
Or it's not losing money. In advertising, we call it investing. Uh-huh. So you're investing in data.
Okay. You're investing. I like that.
You're investing in data. No, but it's true. Like yeah. you invest money to get in front of a certain amount of people and you see what happens.
See, now you don't have to get fired anymore. Because we just invested $100,000 for data. We did get a return on that.
Right. We now know all the people who are not going to buy our product.
That was worth $100,000 of our advertising.
Right. And so you're investing in data.
That's hilarious.
Okay. So the best way, I think, to kind of talk about this hedge fund style mm-hmm. thinking for advertising mm-hmm. is something me and my best friend Andrew came up with a while back, and mm-hmm. we call it the next dollar true value paradigm.
Okay.
And what it is... it's just another way of kind of describing essentially how advertising auction systems already work, mm-hmm. like essentially how Google Ads particularly mm-hmm. works, but then also it goes across all the different platforms. Mm-hmm. And what Google Ads is trying to do, or what any sort of algorithm is trying to do, is find the most efficient way to spend money, mm. right?
Yeah.
In a way to get the best possible result. And what essentially it's doing at, like hyper speed, because it's obviously now a lot of it's being done by AI, mm-hmm. is it's trying to figure out what is the best way to spend the next dollar.
Okay.
And what is the theoretical true value of a particular person or a particular like targeting configuration mm-hmm. to you?
To you as the marketing?
To person? You as whoever is doing the advertising.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And when we talk about like a person or targeting configuration, like as an example, it'd be like men between the age of 45 and 55 who live in Oregon, mm-hmm. their true value to you is probably going to be different than the true value to a different company, okay. depending on what you guys are doing.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so very much how in the stock market, there is a theoretical true value for a stock. Mm-hmm. There's the kind of the face value of what people are currently willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. But there's also, you're trying to pay the amount of money for a stock that corresponds as closely as possible to what its actual true value is.
I see.
Monetarily, right?
So it's always a moving target.
It's always a moving target.
It also really matters, like what you value that customer.
Exactly. Attention. Yeah. Yeah. And so, so those are the two questions you're trying to answer. And those are the two questions, essentially, when you're running a lot of these algorithms, right? Mm-hmm. And what my big recommendation would be to new marketers, essentially, find ways to trust and use the algorithms to your advantage, because they're moving faster than we can. I used to do a lot of stuff manually back in the day, mm-hmm. when like all this technology first came out, but and I used to be able to sometimes beat it. Now it's just like,
yeah,
no chance, right?
I remember back in the day when, like, you know, when Google Ads were new, like, you know, the auction system was very simple. You know, you just have to outbid your competitors to get in the top position. But things have changed from like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like now there's so many algorithms behind, you know, what place you get, you know, it doesn't even matter how much you bid on, I feel like, sometimes, because the algorithm is going to push the ones that people have a higher click-through rate, for example, or people actually like want to look at, versus even if you outbid them, mm-hmm. Google will rank the higher performing, what they consider the higher performing ads above you.
High performing, or in essence, that's a brilliant thing they did, mm-hmm. is Google, when they invented the quality score.
Yeah.
And, What that basically means is that, like, Pepsi can't bid on Coke's stuff, mm-hmm. you know, without facing a penalty. Essentially, mm-hmm. the more relevant you are to the thing you're trying to advertise,
yeah.
right, the less you have to pay money in terms of advertising,
yeah.
right? The worse you are as an advertiser towards, like, the topic you're trying to advertise, mm-hmm. the more you have to pay a penalty, right?
Yeah.
Because the number one customer for Google, right, is the person looking, mm-hmm. for stuff, right?
Right?
Google built its brand on the fact that you look things up and you find the answers to your questions.
Yeah, it's like magic. Yay.
Right. And so their goal is to deliver quality information to the people who are looking stuff up, right? And so one of the things they did to essentially incentivize good behavior, mm-hmm. in their system is they developed a quality score. So when you put out an ad, they kind of have ways of figuring out how good that ad is to the topic you're trying to advertise on.
Yeah.
Right. And you, if it's bad, you get penalized. You can still advertise, but you're just going to pay a lot more.
You know, it's so funny because Google did this way back when. When was this, when they implemented this quality?
I don't know. I remember, I think it was, it was after I finished high school.
So maybe like 20 years ago?
Probably 2008, 9, 10, something like that.
15 years ago.
I don't know. That's when I was first starting to mess around with this stuff.
So, like, let's say like 2008, but I feel like they were the ones who kind of, like, broke ground, not only for like future advertising, but just for algorithms in general.
Yeah.
You know, like, why push, like, this is very prevalent now because people always talk about the algorithm, like YouTube or like for content makers. Like, there was a famous talk, I think, recently from the founder of Patreon, where he did, mm-hmm. a whole hour long talk in South by about the death of the follower. Like, it doesn't matter anymore if you get a subscriber anymore, uh-huh. because it's been devalued by the algorithm. Because algorithm, just like how Google came up with a quality score, the algorithm on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram and even Facebook, they just push stuff that people actually want to watch.
Yeah.
Not necessarily what they follow.
And it's amazing.
Yeah.
So, I love it. Like, because if the algorithm does its job well, we are happy because we're getting information,
yeah.
and stuff that entertains us or touches us in some way.
Yeah.
You know, that resonates with us.
Yeah.
Which is very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next dollar, true value paradigm. So about the next dollar aspect of it, essentially, it's pretty simple, is that you want to spend the lowest you can for the thing you're trying to get. You're trying to get the best price you can for your desired action,
mm-hmm.
right? And so whenever you're deciding what your desired action is, it could be you're trying to get a purchase, you're trying to get somebody to visit your website, you're trying to get a subscriber, right? And essentially what it is, in certain places and in certain situations, for example, if you're on a certain platform, you might find you are getting a better price to get a purchase on Google versus Facebook,
mm.
right? Mm-hmm. So where would you spend the next dollar?
Mm.
On, yeah. the place where you're getting the best price,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Or you could take it down a lower level. You're on Facebook and you're advertising to people below the age of 30 versus people over the age of 30, mm-hmm. and you find people over the age of 30 you're getting a better price to be able to get purchases for older people.
Mm-hmm.
And so your next dollar should go towards those people.
So,
right?
So it's almost like you do an A-B test, right?
Right.
So you figure out, okay, where do I spend a dollar? You kind of, right. split the audience, and you go, okay, do I go this direction or this direction?
So that's right. So like, basically, you're trying to figure out where to spend your next dollar. Mm-hmm. And the algorithms fundamentally are already doing this automatically, mm-hmm. but it's important to understand that's what they're doing. Is they're trying to figure out who, what, where is the best place to spend the next dollar yeah. to get you the best result. And so what ends up happening is that, as you, for example, if you find you're doing really, really well in one place or with a particular demographic, mm-hmm. The more you spend money there, eventually you start hitting the law of diminishing returns.
Okay.
So essentially you start hitting a saturation point where mm-hmm. you've gathered up all the low-hanging fruit, or you've already like hit, you know, like 80% of the people in a particular zip code, yeah. right? And, you know, essentially it's now more beneficial to go spend your next dollar somewhere else.
Yeah.
Even though that targeting...
You brought up a good point. This happens all the time in marketing. It's because you... Even if you're successful in a small market and you think, oh my God, I got such a ROI on this, I just have to scale and increase my budget. It doesn't work that way. You know, a lot of times when you think you figured it out and then you just throw more money at it, you end up losing more money because you've hit that sweet spot.
You've hit a saturation point.
And you hit a saturation point and you're not going to get any of that. You're going to just get diminishing returns added money.
Yeah, and one of the best ways to kind of illustrate that is, again, on Google Ads, the search impression share. So essentially what it is, you put in whatever your configuration settings are for who you're targeting, right? You're looking for people who are looking up hair extensions, and those people are geographically, I don't know, in Santa Monica, mm-hmm. right? There's a certain amount of people who look up hair extensions in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. I don't know,
right?
3,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
At a certain point, the search impression share is telling you what percent of those people have now seen your ad, right?
Yeah.
Right? And so having 100% search impression share is generally not efficient.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
It's basically you've now probably gone past the saturation point.
The point. Yeah.
Right? And so usually the ideal saturation in a lot of those kinds of situations, it's somewhere between like 40 and 80%.
Okay.
Right, before you now have to decide how to spend that next dollar somewhere else.
I see. So you can't get too comfortable. You always have
to searching. You have to keep an eye on it, right?
For a new audience.
And so, again, it's kind of easier to think about in a kind of e-commerce standpoint. So mm-hmm. you've targeted a particular group of people, and now it's getting more and more expensive to get that next sale. Mm-hmm. And past a certain point, your next dollar might be better spent somewhere else. Maybe it's a different advertising platform.
I see.
Maybe it's targeting a different geography. Uh-huh. Maybe it's targeting, you were targeting men, now you need to target women, uh-huh. whatever it is. So how do you spend that next dollar?
Interesting.
And so, and generally as you kind of saturate markets, it usually makes sense to sort of think about from places where you're gonna win, easy to, and then spread out of that places where you're going to probably win less. Okay. And so as an example, if you think about it in different places, I like to think about it like you start with things that are like part of your identity, mm-hmm. right? So let's say you are I used to work a lot with plastic surgeons. So like, mm-hmm. let's say you're a plastic surgeon, like your name, or I'm a plastic surgeon in a particular place, mm-hmm. like I'm plastic surgeon Beverly Hills, right? You're focusing on that kind of topic before you move on to something like the solution. Right, which is facelift, Botox, breast augmentation, right? Because you should probably saturate and win the battles for the things that are more likely to be used. So if somebody's looking for a plastic surgeon
Beverly Hills.
In Beverly Hills, mm-hmm. right, and you are a plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills, that is probably the place you wouldn't want to spend your dollar unless it's super competitive financially battle.
So you're finding ways to find different pockets. Mm-hmm. of audience or targeting by just rethinking. Okay,
You start thinking about going from more specific to less specific. The other example would be like in a restaurant situation, if you're like McDonald's, mm-hmm. right? You want to, first of all, saturate McDonald's. You want to mm-hmm. saturate Big Mac. You want to probably saturate something like hamburger or mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Well, yeah. So the next thing is like, you saturate your identity, what you are, mm-hmm. then you can saturate the solution you bring. So in mm-hmm. the plastic surgeon situation, it'd be like facelift, Botox, breast augmentation. In the restaurant example, it would be the solution is a hamburger or restaurant, mm-hmm. right? Then you can move on further out, less specific, and you could start talking about the problem, mm-hmm. right? So reduce wrinkles, lose weight, or in the restaurant example, I don't know, places to get food near me or like something like that, cheap food. Mm-hmm. And then you can move out farthest to something we call the long tail, mm-hmm. or I like to call it the stuff that's adjacent, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody's looking for stuff maybe to do with weddings.
So can you,
might want to have some cosmetic.
Can you explain what the long tail is for the people?
So a long tail is when you're kind of going after something that is a long shot, mm-hmm. right? That is not obvious to get you what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But if you can spend a low enough price on it, it's mm-hmm. still worth it for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's like when I think of long tail, I think of literally like a graph where you start at the top and it goes really long. But the volume of that length of that little low end volume,
yeah, it's a lot smaller.
But all to the total value of that is worth as much as the volume up here.
It can be, yeah. So sometimes the long tail is the best place to spend the next dollar.
Interesting.
And a lot of times it would be like the adjacent thing. So uh-huh. for like a restaurant example, a long tail would be like soccer tournament, where to feed my teenage soccer team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, imagine if you're doing like keyword marketing.
Yeah.
It's all the random keywords that you only get like one or two searches a month. But if you market towards like 1,000 of them, you'll get at least 1,000.
Right. And a lot of times there are things that are adjacent in terms of meaning to the specific thing.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of trying to explain how, okay, when you spend the next dollar, you're basically looking at where you're getting the best result. Mm-hmm. And once that price starts going up because you're saturating the market, you got to move on to spend the next dollar somewhere else.
Okay.
That topic, a little bit more boring than the true value topic. So
the true value.
Okay. We're going to go.
Okay.
So, how do you spend your next dollar is the first question, right?
Okay.
Next dollar, true value paradigm. The true value. So essentially what that means and what you're trying to think about is that every targeting configuration mm-hmm. has a theoretical true value to you.
Okay.
Right. So, and you're trying to spend as close to that true value as possible. Mm-hmm. And as a way to kind of illustrate how crazy as it could be. So like a male German car mechanic mm-hmm. in Dusseldorf has some true value to our hair extensions salon in Marina Del Rey.
Okay.
It's probably a very, very, very small value mm-hmm. because if you advertise to that male German car mechanic in Dusseldorf, mm-hmm. you probably need to show up to a billion of them.
Right. Okay.
Before somehow your advertisement causes the hair extension salon in Marina Del Rey to gain business.
Right.
But
there just might be that 1% of a million.
Right. But theoretically, every single situation, every single type of person or every single type of like overlap of targeting mm-hmm. has a true value to you. Mm-hmm. It's just probably really, really small. And you probably can't get that price.
So it's a theoretical, like you just have to know that there's some sort of minuscule value.
Yeah. And so for that, like, you know, if you're that really weird, crazy out there thing, you might be willing to pay 0.00000001 cents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it'll be worth it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
From this standpoint.
Yeah. To get that 1 cent.
Right. So you have to kind of keep in mind how mm-hmm. that works. Mm-hmm. And so as a way to sort of illustrate how this kind of comes into play, I came up with this kind of scenario. So let's say you have a website mm-hmm. and you're bringing people to this website through some sort of advertising or some sort of effort, right? A lot of times we're talking about marketing, so therefore we talk about advertising, but sometimes, you know, you're not spending money. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're spending time. Mm-hmm. So it could also be effort. But okay. in this case, you know, you're spending money to get people to a website and you have a target action. It's like purchasing something that you want to get for $100. Mm-hmm. Because if you can get somebody to purchase by spending $100, you are making money. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of scenario. So 1 in 100 men who come to your website buy.
Okay.
So in this scenario, the true value of those visitors is $1.
Okay.
Right? Makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, if you're able to get
$100, you get one conversion.
Right. So if you're able to get men to come to your website mm-hmm. for $1 mm-hmm. and 1 in 100,
it's gonna be worth it.
It's worth it for you. Yeah. You're hitting your target, right? Yeah. 1 in 50 women who come to your website buy.
Mm.
So the true value of those women
is
$2.
Yeah.
So it's not worth it for you mm-hmm. when you're fighting in the auction markets mm-hmm. to spend $2 for those women.
See. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. People from California convert twice as much as people from Oregon or from other states, mm-hmm. something, right? So California men, mm-hmm. their true value to you is now $2.
Yeah, doubles.
And same right? Because you're overlapping men
right.
in California. So yeah. 100 men, but like twice as many people from California are likely to buy. So mm-hmm. men are $2, right? California women are now what?
$4.
$4, yeah. right? So you're overlapping the fact that women are now worth $2, but twice as many of them from California
I see.
Are getting you your result. Uh-huh. So now it's worth $4 for you uh-huh. to be competing in an auction market to get people, women in California.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, to come to your website. Right. People who are 50 plus convert twice as much, right? Uh-huh. So 50 plus California women.
$8.
$8.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. now, so you're still thinking about yeah. like, this is how these algorithms work.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out what is the true value true of different value. Kinds of people
yeah.
towards getting whatever the result that you're optimizing for in the algorithm,
yeah.
which is in a sale, somebody coming to a website. They're basically trying to figure out what is the worth of that person.
So the algorithm is putting the work in, but
yeah.
you're saying that we should also be aware of what's going on
yeah.
as well.
Because the answer to the question, the way you're actually probably going to implement in the world is that you are going to be oftentimes using bidding algorithms like target CPA, mm-hmm. basically target cost per acquisition or cost per action, to basically tell the system, like, I'm willing to pay $100 to have this thing happen.
Yeah.
And then the system goes out into the world and yeah. tries to figure out.
And it figures it out.
And it figures it out. And it's doing it by calculating value for different types of people and trying to figure out, like, oh, this is the best place for yeah. to spend that next dollar.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
I know this is kind of weird, crazy math stuff, like, but like,
yeah.
But this is the voodoo.
Yeah.
This is the magic,
the
right?
Magic, like, the you know, like
making a pretty picture and putting it out into the world. Yeah, that's cool. Like, yeah, uh-huh. anybody can do this.
Yeah.
But this is the magic. This is the stuff that gets you paid the big bucks. This is the hedge fund management.
So is there any way to, like, for example, to shortcut this, like, so that you don't? Because I'm sure when the algorithm is probably takes a lot of time to figure that out, right?
No, not really. No? And I mean, things can work pretty quickly. Uh-huh. Obviously, you start off where in situations you start off with your low hanging fruit. Uh-huh. So, if you are, you know, if you're selling like hair products, uh-huh. right, or something, they're primarily targeted at women. Don't advertise to men. Mm-hmm. In the targeting configuration,
so you can just target it,
right? And you just yeah. keep an eye on attention. Yeah. But the important thing is to keep in mind what is the value of a particular action to you, uh-huh. right? And what is the value of a particular targeting configuration to you? An overlap of all these different elements,
yeah.
right? To the point where, for example, in this kind of example, so people over 50 convert twice as much, right? And then let's say if 50 plus California women are $8, and then people on Sundays convert twice as much. A 50 plus California woman on Sunday is worth
$16. $16, yeah.
Right. So now your next dollar is best spent on Sunday.
Yeah.
Potentially, right? Yeah. And you're willing to, you know, compete more aggressively in the auction on Sunday than on Monday.
Yeah.
And then 50 plus California women, potentially using iPhones on Sunday would be worth $32 to you. And so yeah, just keeping those things in mind. So
just
whenever you're going into this thing and keeping an eye on the data is trying to figure out what is the true value to you.
I see.
You know, what are you willing to pay for it? And if you're not able to get that price, then you probably need to look somewhere else.
I feel like this is very important. Again, just important information, how this is an investment also when you're spending this money to becoming a marketing expert. But if you're spending that money, you need to really start analyzing the data to get to know who your true audience is. And once you start understanding who your true audience, then you can start thinking about more creatives and
yeah.
how to target specific. So I feel like it's very important for people to learn that you really have to figure out who the highest value, the true value audience is that's going to convert.
Yeah.
So it's really useful information.
And then, you know, in those situations, you're willing to go in more. You're willing to bet
yeah.
more
yeah.
on that particular action, like yeah. gambling.
And I feel like once you figure it out, an audience, you know, you might have other competitors who haven't figured it out yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like mining too, like mining for like gold, right? You found a vein, and no one else has found that particular vein or that strategy or that method, and you can just kind of pick away at it.
Well, but the kind of almost magical thing about these kind of efficiency systems, right, or about these auction systems, is that theoretically, at the end of the day, everybody will land in the place that is most efficient for them. Because you're willing to pay $32 for a woman above her 50s in California who uses iPhones on Sundays, right? But somebody else is only willing to pay $20 for that. But there's a different place where they can be more aggressive. So eventually everyone kind of finds their place. And that's kind of how like Google Ads algorithm basically works, is that it's trying to put everybody in the best possible place for them based on whatever their results are.
Interesting.
And within the realities of the competitive, of the auction market, of how competitive it is. So just as an illustration of some of these different targeting configurations that you could be looking at, right, is, so schedule.
Okay.
Hours of a day or a particular day of the week is a big, big factor, right?
Okay.
Tech, so device, mobile versus laptop versus tablet. Operating system, for example, you can target based on people who are using Android or, you know, iOS. You could be targeting based on browsers, right? You might be finding that people who use Bing are better customers for you than people who use Google, because a lot of, for example, older people never know how to switch from Bing to Google, right?
Chrome.
And so if you're targeting products that are more geared towards older people, let's say you're, you know, trying to target them with like insurance or something, I don't know, some sort of something, you know, you might find that it's more efficient for you.
So these are like kind of low-hanging fruit that you can just immediately divide up your audience to go after. So
you start looking about like, where is the most efficient place to spend my next dollar?
Very interesting.
Right. Platform, obviously, on a big scale. So like, am I advertising things on Google Ads? Am I advertising on TikTok? Am I advertising on YouTube ads? Am I advertising on Facebook? Am I advertising on Taboola with like native advertising kind of stuff? You figure out like, you know, where's the next dollar best spent? And what is the true value of people who come from that configuration to you? Because if you're still trying to get that $100 sale, right? And only 1 in 1,000 people who come from Taboola to your website actually buy, then you can only be spending, what is it? 10 cents per person?
Yeah, yeah.
Or something like that?
Yeah,
10 cents or 1 cent? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I failed math, ironically. All right. So gender and age, probably the, you know, probably the biggest levers that we use in advertising to kind of figure out.
That's what I think of immediately, gender and age.
Right, because again, especially age, people at different points in their life have different considerations, different worries, right? People younger in life have worries about looking good and potentially attracting a mate and getting married. People who are older are more worried about whether the kids are going to get into college and there's going to be enough money to pay for the college. You know, there's all these different nuances to different stages of life as we pass through life are. And so one of the biggest, most powerful ways of figuring out, making sure that your ad gets in front of the right person is going to be gender or age. Interest audiences. So a lot of these systems have the ability to present us with interest audiences. So like basically people who somehow have shown that they're interested in fitness or interested in luxury products or whatever it is. I remember I would sometimes overlap in like the plastic surgery space. There's a Google audience for people who buy jewelry. And I found that people who buy jewelry, and what you could do is, what's cool about Google Ads, you have the ability to have bid adjustments. Basically say like, for people who fit into my criteria and also fit into this jewelry audience without overlap.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Be 50% more aggressive.
Oh.
Because those are my people.
See, but that just comes from experience, right? From doing this.
Well, you notice these things, right? And then you start realizing like, this is how you kind of sort of can incentivize and be more aggressive with certain things.
You know, you said you need to be a data nerd too, but I feel like at the same time, you have to be very creative. You have to have a creative mindset to kind of think that way.
You have to have empathy. You have the ability to project yourself into people's minds.
Okay, interesting.
Right.
Okay.
And so, like one of the things I came up with, like, again, if you think about a resume as a piece of advertising, on my resume, at the very top of my resume, I have this thing, data plus empathy equals influence hacking. Right. And it's just something just to get people's attention, right? As a kind of a, like, you know, it's like, it's a philosophy, right? That I kind of came up with. And so this whole data nerd thing plus the ability to project yourself into people's experiences.
I see.
Is what allows you to essentially be the whole package for in marketing.
That's really good advice for people who are getting into marketing. Because I sometimes tend to look at the analytical side a little too much, but like you have to really step in your audience's shoes and you have to project yourself. Okay, who are they? You know, what do they want? What are they feeling? That's very important.
And I think very naturally, the way I think this podcast will evolve, we're going to be focusing way more on that in the podcast. Because those topics are more interesting, right? Again, you're talking about psychology and how people think and people's experiences, right? All this mathematical stuff is less fun to talk about. Again, like, but it's more crucial.
Yeah, I think
in terms of actual results,
there's way enough. I mean, I'm so bored of like marketing videos that talk about like, oh, how do you like analyze, you know, metrics and what is the ROI? Like all these, what's CPCs? Like it's so boring, it's so dull. But like, you know, even though that's important, I feel like even now, like trying to understand, going back to the basics, understanding what truly motivates people, you know, emotionally and psychologically, because that's what the algorithm favors. Right? It's people to actually respond to your ads. People who actually engage. People who actually click on whatever kind of creative or content you put out there. But it's relevant not only for marketing, but, you know, for every algorithm out there, from like TikTok to YouTube.
Yeah.
If you're just a creator, like it's so important to understand the human psychological end of what motivates someone.
If you have the human psychological end figured out, You're gonna be able to do a lot, especially because at that point in time, you're able to at least do it on the kind of organic side, right? You just if you're just creating YouTube videos and TikTok videos and Instagram reels, right? And you're naturally just getting people to engage because you're so magnetic.
Yeah.
Okay. You're already essentially gonna win the game.
Yeah.
Because the algorithm is already essentially working on your behalf in that sense.
Yeah.
And in that case, you're still applying the next dollar true value thing, but your next dollar is really more your time.
See again, I feel like a lot of people who are watching, you know, they might not even understand that they're actually doing this, but when you know, listening to our podcast, they can like understand, okay, why is my method working?
Yeah. You know? So like, for example, if you are able to get massive response just by live streaming on your phone, your next dollar, the most efficient way to spend your next dollar, which in this case is your time.
Yep.
Is just keep doing the live stream. If it's working, if at some point in time you hit a law of diminishing returns, right? Versus, you know, then you might need to move into start spending the next dollar or that effort in a different place.
Yeah.
So that's still that type of thinking still kind of comes in and applies. To finish off these kind of targeting configurations, though, so we talked about interest audiences, behavioral targeting, which in the sense of digital marketing is like when somebody types in something into search, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of traditional, potentially old school marketing is like, you know, what kind of people come to a gas station? I don't know, I'm putting ads on a gas station, right?
Yeah.
For a mechanic shop or something, right? You're thinking about like, oh, people are doing something, right? And you're getting in front of people who are doing a certain behavior. Mm. So obviously we talk about these things largely now in the digital realm, but targeting a billboard is the same kind of thinking. You have to be like, okay, where's my billboard? What is the value of this billboard real estate to
What's
me?
What's the message? Yeah, where is it?
You know, in a relationship, you know, to my goals. So behavior targeting, geography, which states, designated marketing areas, like DMAs, zip codes, congressional districts. Those are big, usually like the areas you're able to target in Facebook and Google Ads and other platforms. And of course, retargeting lists. So the ability to essentially take all those things and all those overlapping things and decide like people who are of a certain age at a certain hour of a day on a certain device in a certain zip code with a certain interest, all those overlapping fixtures, right? That person who fits into those criteria has a true value to your business. And what the algorithm is trying to figure out, and what you also should be aware of and trying to be thinking about, is what is the true value of that targeting configuration.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Yeah.
And if you do that, then you're going to be profitable.
See, like, again, I feel like a lot of marketers, they do this already, but just to put it down, you know, and kind of like understand the basic concepts of that is very important for people to learn.
Okay, so two more things to kind of just jump into. So one thing I really like to talk about, just because I think it's an important bit, is, again, the two big heavy hitters, the Goliaths in current advertising is Facebook and mm-hmm. it's Google Ads.
Yeah.
I think a really good distinction to always think about is that Google Ads, right? You're targeting people with active intent. So people who are actively raising their hand mm-hmm. by typing something in. The I'm looking for a car mechanic. Mm-hmm. Car mechanics near me.
Yeah,
that person's actively raising their hand, right? And that's why generally Google Ads tends to be more competitive auction-wise, because you're able to, it's like a sniper rifle, being able to pinpoint and target a very specific group of people. Mm-hmm. While something like Facebook ads, which is more like display type advertising, is there's passive or no intent whatsoever in those mm-hmm. people, where you're essentially interrupting people's day and trying to get them to do something. So they're doing something else, they're watching cat videos or whatever, and you're trying to present them with a message that is so magnetic and so resonant and so persuasive that you're able to pull them away from those cat videos to actually take the action you want to take.
That's really important for people to understand, especially now when they're trying to market. You have to look at it like you're trying to get someone's attention away from watching those silly videos, those viral videos. You're competing against viral videos that are entertaining, that are mindless, that are dumb. So you have to create content that's equally compelling or more compelling even to even just get their attention. Otherwise, you're going to swipe away.
Yeah. And on the copywriting podcast, mm-hmm. which we're going to work on, mm-hmm. That's the type of things we're going to be talking about, is actually thinking about how to formulate that message for people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, again, so Google Ads, search marketing, it's behavioral targeting. People are taking an action that kind of tells you who they are, what they're looking for, what they're seeking for, and you're able to get in front of them. Oftentimes when they're hunting to make their purchasing decision or whatever mm-hmm. it is, while this kind of more display marketing, where you're targeting groups of people based on who they are, their demographics, sometimes people call it profile-based mm-hmm. targeting, right? You have the ability to plant the seed in people's minds for things they might not even know they want yet. Which is very wrong. So both are really good places. And generally, the answer is like where to spend the next dollar is you're spending in both, right?
Yeah.
In some situations, you know, if you were like, let's say, I don't know, like I used to work with DUI lawyers, mm-hmm. right? Let's say you're a DUI lawyer. Mm-hmm. Chances are the person is typing in DUI lawyer in Google is the person you want to be in front of first.
Right.
Because
right.
chances are somebody who just got in trouble and they're right now, like I need a DUI lawyer, right? Yeah. While you can still develop your brand and let people know who you are through display advertising by planting that seed over time. Uh-huh. But chances are in your particular situation, the next dollar is best spent for the person who's typing in right now, like, I just got pulled over, I got arrested, I need a lawyer.
Yeah, so that's a very important distinction. Right. Yeah, because there are two different platforms, but there are two different types of people who are going to respond to your ad.
Yeah, so it's two different ways of getting in front of people. Yeah. So with display advertising, YouTube also does that, or Facebook or TikTok, you're essentially able to present ideas to people, mm-hmm. right? And plant that seed.
See, that's why I feel like TikTok is such an effective form of marketing now, because again, to be successful on TikTok or, you know, any sort of viral platform for an ad, for a sponsored ad, you have to just really come up with really something that's compelling and creative, equally as creative as everyone else's content, you know.
It's true.
Otherwise,
it's
true. You know, you're not gonna, no one's gonna care.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And one of the things that was innovated by David Ogilvy, right? Mm-hmm. The famous advertiser who started Ogilvy and Mathers, was a big pioneer of what people call native advertising, mm-hmm. where if you're going to have an advertisement in a magazine like mm-hmm. this, right, instead of having a big, glossy, beautiful advertisement, mm-hmm. make your advertisement look like an article, right?
Yeah.
His most famous advertisement is basically a love story to the Rolls Royce. He basically is like, he went to the Rolls Royce factory, they toured him around, he watched every part of the process about how they polish every piece of wood and whatever it is. And then he went home and he wrote a love story to how much care is put into the, and essentially the advertisement is just, it's like a picture at the top of a news article. Uh-huh. And then it's just an article about how amazing you know, how much love goes into making the Rolls Royce.
You know, I'm like thinking back when I used to, when magazines were a thing and I would flip through magazines, you know, those were the best ads, the ones that you couldn't even tell. And you look at it, it's like you start looking at, oh, wait, this is an ad.
Yeah.
But I feel like, again, like everything is coming full circle now, you know, with the algorithm that, you know, you need that.
Yeah. So no, but that's what I'm saying. Like in the case of TikTok, right? In the magazine, for you to be a native advertisement, you have to match the style of the app, right? But in TikTok, you have to match the style of TikTok.
Yes.
So because there's this idea, and I think there's very famous marketer named Eben Pagan, and he brought this up at some point in time, where he would put on a screen advertisements, and he would immediately have people in the audience say, "Is this a give or this is a take?" Within like a fraction of a second. Is this a give or this is a take? And that's how fast our mind, again, can process a picture and try to figure out if this is a take. When you see with those beautiful glossy ads, your immediately mind's right away like, oh, it's an ad.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And that might not be a bad thing. It might be a good ad and you might still grab somebody's attention. Right? But oftentimes we get this feeling like when we see ads, like this is something that's trying to take something from me.
I see.
Right? While an article about how incredible the Rolls Royce is, and like it's a fascinating article to read.
You're gaining.
It's a
something.
Take. You're right. Yeah. And so same thing in the form of TikTok advertisement, right? If you can be native to the style of the platform and give by giving a fun experience, interesting thing, you're probably going to be way more successful.
So that's really good advice. If you're going to market on TikTok or any sort of marketing platform these days,
be native. Like
just examine. Just be honest with your. With your ad and your creative, is this a give or is this take? Is the audience actually going to gain something by looking at this, or are they going to immediately, subconsciously, like how we talked about in our previous episodes, just immediately make that most emotional decision in a fraction of a second and say, I'm not going to pay attention to this?
Yeah, you just scroll. Yeah,
yeah, you scroll away.
A person's mind can process an image in 1/15th of a second.
Yeah.
And so our ability to flip through images so fast, it's amazing, right? And it very quickly, the search engine of our brain tells us, like, is this for us or is this not for us?
Yeah.
And so you want to, at the very least, get past that gateway.
Yeah.
To at least have somebody slow down. And so if you can give off the vibe that you are a give, that you're sharing information and value to people.
Got it.
And that's oftentimes a lot better.
Great advice.
And so the last thing I would bring up, and this is going to be like a very specific technique because I just want to share something that I like to do and people can use. So one of my favorite things to do when I'm first starting off campaigns is to use Facebook's lookalike algorithm. And what you do is you're able to put tracking code on a website. I'm actually doing this with Envoice Media right now, but like you're able to put tracking code on a website. And what you do is you start advertising the site and you set up an audience where you have the tracking code try to basically track who are the top 25% of people by time spent on the website. Or they also have the option to have top 10%, top 5%.
Yeah.
And so even if you're at the beginning of the thing, you don't have enough info to feed the algorithm. Like you don't have enough people who bought your product to feed the algorithm to teach it. Like these are the kinds of people who buy my product. At the very least, you could start off, who are the people who actually hang out and read the website longer than the other people?
So you're basically farming this data.
You have no idea
who the audience is, right? So you just create this bait. And see, okay, who's going to swim around longest?
Who's going to come to this website? Who's going to spend time actually reading it as opposed to leaving and bouncing?
Got it.
And then you take that audience of the top 25%, right? And you make a lookalike out of it, which is basically the systems, ad platforms these days, have the ability to, if you give them a group of people through tracking data, right? It can sense, you know, kind of who these people are. Because most of us are logged into Facebook on our phones or Instagram or that kind of thing. Then it's like, who are other people who look like this person?
So to explain to like people who are new to marketing, the lookalike audience, you're basically letting the algorithm figure out who are the same type of people who linger around. And they have all the data in the world to figure that out. We don't, but they do.
You're basically telling them like, you know, these are the people who are, and obviously we benefit from using Facebook, Instagram, and Google, right? But we also kind of, they have our information in the sense like they know how old we are, what our gender is, what our interests are based on like you know, if you're liking cat videos or if you're liking car videos about, you know, vintage cars or whatever it is, they can sort of tell like, oh, you're a person who likes vintage cars or whatever it is. And they can take all that information and they could look at like who else looks like you if you are the person who is the top 25% by time spent on a website. And goes out there and looks for other people.
Yeah.
And again, if you can get in front of the right person, it's far more important than having a good ad.
Yeah.
A good ad supercharges that, but getting in front of the right person, that's where the magic happens, and that's where essentially the money is, happens. Right. You're buying the real estate of people's attention.
Yeah.
To try to get value out of it, and that's how advertising, in a lot of ways, is like hedge fund management, and a little bit like gambling.
But it's, but again, like it is, and it's kind of scary, but it's good to know that, you know, we don't have to do all the math ourselves. We can just understand, okay, just some basic strategies. How do we get the audience? How do we make the algorithm work for us? You know, because there's people are like really intimidated, like trying to find the right audience. But I guess what you're saying is that if you just let the algorithm or let them decide how to actually market and find that audience, that they have all their information, and just let them work for you.
Let them work for you. And the biggest thing is in most of the advertising platforms, you have some sort of bid strategy, like target CPA, where you tell it what you're trying to get. For example, a visit to your website versus a purchase. And if all the tracking code is working and everything is flowing correctly, you tell them, this is worth $100 to me, right? And then what it'll do is if you can't get it for $100, it won't serve the ads. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so using the target CPA, and Facebook, they call it cost cap, and different platforms, it's basically where you tell it, this is the value. This is the true value, of this.
You're telling it the true
thing
value.
To me.
Yeah.
And then it's trying to work backwards to find who fits.
So it's working to figure that out.
It's trying to figure out like, and who is it worth spending the next dollar to get in front of, to still get you,
and if the outcome you want. If you can't find it, then okay, you don't.
Well, yeah, at some point, if you set it too low and it's completely unrealistic, basically it doesn't serve ads.
Yeah,
and then you have to like raise it, or you have to rethink your
different audience, or
you have to just rethink what you're doing, because it's possible that there's no efficient mathematical solution to winning the auctions in your situation.
Well, I mean, that was some very, I mean, you've said this is going to be kind of very basic, but I think it's very fundamental for a lot of people to understand in marketing, you know, and just even think creatively. Like, that just gets me thinking, okay, how do I get this audience? I could just create some websites and see whoever like lingers towards a certain category of like content, and let the algorithm do the work for me. Like,
yeah, Chance, sorry, if you're watching this video right now, you've ended up in my top 25% lookalike audience. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, if you came through this through a Facebook ad, guess what? You fit that picture.
Yeah, we're spying on you.
No, we're not, Gene. We're letting Facebook is. Meta Facebook is. We're not. Yeah. They're doing the privacy stuff. Anyways, well, I think that wraps it up. Thank you, Gene. I think that was a great episode. It went very detailed, and a little bit, and more analytical than our typical episodes. But I think it was, again, very important to learn.
Yeah, other episodes, we're gonna go back to talking about like sunglasses.
I know,
and
that's the fun part. I love
that's fun,
about
but like, but that's why I felt it was important to go into this whole targeting topic.
Yeah, yeah.
Messaging is fun. Creating message and content. Yeah. That's the fun, cool part of advertising.
But
this targeting stuff again. Yeah. This is where the battles are won.
But again, I think everything in marketing is going full circle back to the Mad Men age, because we're letting the robots do all the targeting now and all the analytics. Now we can just, whoever wins the creative content game is going to be the kings of advertising moving forward.
Yeah.
So, anyways, thank you guys for joining us. Manipulation Games, Psychology and Marketing. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, and YouTube if you want to go and check us out, see what we look like. And until next time, Gene.
Yeah. And Voice Media.
Voice your passion. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.